My name is Robert Brown, and I immigrated to Australia in 1852 with my family. I was 15 years of age when my father was employed to build the first rail lines in the new colony of Victoria. We sailed aboard the Skintian, and that's where I first met Mr. Lawler. He'd been trained as a civil engineer back in Ireland, and my father talked with him often. My father respected Mr. Lawler and thought he was an impressive young man and offered him a job when we arrived in Geelong. I didn't see him for several years, but the next time was on the Ballarat goldfields. Of course, I wanted to head to Ballarat as soon as I got off the boat, but my mother said I was too young. Finally, at 17, I was allowed to go, so I packed my bag and headed off. It was the first time I'd been away from my family. Digging for gold was a lot harder than I thought it would be. You had to dig right down into the ground, at least 100 feet, to find a lead of gold, and it was hard to breathe when you got down deep. Besides, I'd been used to meals morning, noon and night, and I had to fend for myself now and eat the most basic of foods. Conditions were rough, and I hated the policemen that checked my license and treated me like a criminal, but I couldn't go skulking home after only a few weeks. I didn't know that by staying, I would be swept up in a series of events that culminated at Eureka. Father wanted me to write about Mr. Humphrey, a chartist like himself. You see, I had written to my parents, and in trying to allay my mother's worrying, I wrote that Mr. Humphrey and others had established the Ballarat Reform League and were working to improve conditions on the goldfields. But as soon as I sent that first letter off, I realized things were changing. Humphrey pleaded with the diggers to stay calm, but things were getting very restless around the diggings. I next ran into Mr. Lawler at the funeral of James Scobie, and I later saw him at a huge meeting where he addressed a crowd of diggers. He said that the acquittal of Bentley for Scobie's death was unjust, and he rallied the men to call for a retrial. My father often said, "The Irish wear their persecution like a badge." And in a letter to me, he wondered if it was the Tipperary mob causing the trouble. I told him all the diggers were demanding their human rights, and they were men from all over the world. But they could contain their fury no longer. They had been goaded and treated like dogs. Mr. Humphrey slipped away into the shadows as Peter Lawler called men to arms. Many brave men took up the challenge, and I, mere sapling that I was, stood alongside them. I too had always admired Mr. Lawler, and even though I wasn't sure of my fighting prowess, the call to arms for a young lad was enticing. There were about 500 that Lawler divided into companies, and I served under Captain John Lynch. I wrote to tell Father of the occasion. Lawler had us kneel down, hand on heart, and pledge. "We swear by the Southern Cross to stand truly by each other and fight to defend our rights and liberties." "Amen," we all cried out. Mr. Lawler said that Bakery Hill, the site of the meeting, was too exposed, so we marched up to a place on the Eureka Lead. There he had us build a stockade from old mining timbers that we crisscrossed. We turned over old wagons, cartwheels, whatever we could lay our hands on. Mr. Lawler, well, he'd seen this sort of defence back in Ireland. A few of us did some practice drills, marching up and down inside the stockade. But it was late, so I headed to my tent.